My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep. And when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Ooh-wee.
Oh, baby.
You got to hit me with the gotcha down.
Gotcha down?
Yeah, the old Chris Arnold. By the way, you know Chris... down. Did you know Chris missed the NBA Finals?
No.
Yeah, I guess he had not anticipated they were going to make it, so he had like some travel scheduled then. So it was old Ali D doing the, they play the Celtics. The whole little arena pump up thing. But I think, honestly, that's probably why the Mavericks.
Down.
That's probably why the Mavericks ultimately dropped it. Was
I blame Chris.
They didn't have Chris Arnold there.
Yeah, I think you can do that. I think it's fair. Chris takes blame.
All in. What does all in mean, RJ Choppy?
My all in might mean something different than your all in.
I'll tell you what it means. Two signings yesterday, baby.
Oh, really? Dak and CD?
Not just one.
Mike and CD?
No. You went out and
Dak and Micah?
You got outside help.
Really?
Outside help.
From Davion Clowney?
From the UFL.
Oh.
So that's important.
But these are two players that I think are at least...
No.
That I think are at least interesting. And I think one of them is going to make the 53-man roster, actually. So the Cowboys signed cornerback Gerrion Conley, and they signed linebacker Willie Harvey. Now, Gerrion Conley, that name might sound familiar to some people. He was the cornerback from Ohio State who, I don't know if you'll recall the shop, 2017, about a week out of the draft, do you remember there was an Ohio State corner who had been accused of sexual assault?
I do.
And this was right in the middle of all the drama and murmuring about Zeke Elliott coming out of Ohio State. He was a year past his, a year past his draft, and everything with the Tiffany Thompson situation had popped off at that point. And so there was a lot of heat and a lot of attention to what is it exactly that is going on at Ohio State? What program has Urban Meyer run? What kind of issues is causing? He was cleared of it ultimately, Gerrion Conley. In fact, I think she ended up having to pay some sort of penalty for making a false accusation, like a jury found her guilty. So, but ultimately, Gerrion Conley, there was a question about, was he going to slide completely out of the draft? He ultimately goes pick 24. That was four spots ahead of where Taco Charlton was picked.
Ew.
Had he been there at 28 for the Cowboys, they would have drafted Gerrion Conley.
Okay.
And so this is a guy that they liked a lot. He ends up going to the Raiders, has injury issues there, doesn't play very well, gets traded to the Texans, plays a year there. And then he was out of football for 3 years before he went into the UFL and had a pretty good season.
Mm-hmm.
But he'd been away from football for 3 years. I think it's interesting that you would have a corner come in, though, with one of your, you have four empty roster spots. They signed two players yesterday, so they have two more spots that they can fill before they get to training camp. I think it's interesting to me that they felt the need to work out a couple of corners and add one, because that does make me wonder, is Diggs going to be ready to be a full participant right away at camp?
Ooh.
Not is he going to be ready for the season, but do you need another body in training camp at corner?
Look, obviously he's not going to play in any of the games.
No.
What month was it? It was
leading into the Jets game. Or was it after? It was after the Jets game. He played the first two games, so it was going into week three.
Oh, man. I mean, it's a full year, but 9 months anyway.
Roughly.
At minimum. Yeah, you definitely need a body at camp.
So, Conley...
But again, I mean, like, do they still view needing a body the same as they used to? Because you're not doing two-a-days. You're not doing as many padded practices.
I think they do in the sense of just, we want to make sure we have healthy competition and we're rotating in enough quality for these guys to go against. And Conley had a good year in the UFL, despite being away from the NFL for 3 years. Now, one of the other corners that they brought in to work out, who they ultimately didn't sign, was DeAndre Baker, who I don't know if you remember him, but he also has a background. He was the one who the Giants had picked in the first round in 2020, and after his rookie year, he was arrested for armed robbery and burglary with, who was it? It was Quentin Dunbar from Washington, yeah. How they had tried to hold somebody up. He ended up with the Chiefs, of course, because they signed everyone that and hadn't been anywhere since. But Conley is at least an interesting name. That was a guy they really loved in 2017. Probably just a gamble, a flyer that says, hey, we had a good evaluation on this guy. The one that's more interesting to me is Willie Harvey. I think Willie Harvey's going to make the 53-man roster. So they're thin at linebacker. We've talked about that pretty consistently. I think when you see a position where they're already thin and Mike Zimmer has a chance to, before he leaves town for this layoff, get a chance to look at Willie Harvey working out and says, yes, I want him. Sign him. I think that that does carry some weight in terms of his approval at a position where they could probably stand to add somebody and bring in competition. But Willie Harvey, the only knock on him really is he's a little undersized. He's not very long. He doesn't have long arms. He's 5'11", like 230. So he's not a traditional built stout linebacker, but he's quick mental processor, really good instincts, flies to the ball, really good special teamer. He made Cleveland's 53-man roster as an undrafted free agent who was undersized, not a combine invite, made it in 2020 as a guy who was a special teams ace of sorts. And so when you start talking about the back end of the roster guys here, Bones Fossil is going to have a huge say on which guys make it because of how they contribute to his unit. So you got a guy who can contribute to special teams, does a good job processing things, has good instincts. That's going to matter to Mike Zimmer. So I think when you talk about how thin the linebackers are, this is one where you could actually see the guy make the roster.
Do you think special teams coaches have too much power over rosters?
I don't know. I mean, they run the back end of them in a lot of ways. Like guys 47 through 53, or because of who's active on game day, I guess guys 43 through 46 or whatever it is. Maybe a little, but I mean, it's also, we've seen how important it's been in the past to the Cowboys. Like, if the Cowboys have had bad special teams, it's cost them games at times. And when they've had really improved special teams, it's been a big boost for them. Now, somebody who is a fan of this Willie Harvey signing is one Brian Broaddus. I mentioned to you, Choppy, earlier that while Peyton was talking about how overrated he thought the Willie Mays catch was, he said that while we were recording Love the Star, and Brian had reached out to his gang of seven, his personnel connections around the NFL, and had asked them, hey, what's the scoop on this Willie Harvey guy?
What I've learned about the linebacker, a little bit of an undersized guy, 5'11", 230 pounds, going to be more of a will linebacker. Will linebackers tend to play to the open side or away from the tight end. Usually off the ball, and they usually are your runners. Those are the guys that can get to the ball. You try and free him up as much as you can and let him go. And this young man's got that ability. Always around the ball, really good tackler, going to be a real factor on special teams from my gang of seven guys that I was talking to that watched this UFL film. They really do like the player. Dallas has done a good job, as we've seen, of evaluating these leagues, finding guys like this and saying, hey, let's go get the best one, or let's go get the next best one.
Okay, two things here. One, you need a better background.
I'm looking for comfort, dude. I was sitting on the casting couch. That's what I was doing.
Yeah, you need a better background on that Love of the Star podcast for sure. Get a painting. Get something back there. I mean, look at that thing on the fan cam.
I was sitting. What do you want me to do? I was just sitting on my couch.
A blank wall. Secondly, and I don't know if I speak for the people or not. You're trying to, not you. If this team is trying to convince us that these signings matter at all, holy cow, we're talking about UFL guys.
They're not, but I will say
this. The Lions are trying to do this, right? We got a new kicker.
No, here's what I will say, though. The Cowboys have developed a reputation across the league. One of the areas where they're actually considered by the rest of the league to be, all right, you've nailed this, has been evaluating the spring leagues. Like they did, they nailed the Turpin signing. They nailed Brandon Aubrey. Veterans in general that they have coming off of, like if you look at this shop, the last 3 years, I think it is, the Cowboys have signed four guys after the start of training camp who essentially went on to become starters. Brett Maher, when you consider top of the depth chart returner in Kevontae Turpin, Turpin is another, Malik Hooker, Anthony Barr. Like they've shown mm-hmm. that they can, this June, July period where they try to make some depth signings, this is where they actually have been more consistent than their signings that they've done in March and April a lot of times. So it's at least a guy that Conley, I don't think is going to make this roster, but Willie Harvey, at least if you're looking for improved linebacker play, that's somebody who I think can make this roster and actually take snaps. So that's a name at least to know on that front. Dak Prescott, we talked about that he was at tight end U in Nashville, showing up mm-hmm. in his Aaron Judge jersey.
Have we confirmed it was a Judge jersey?
I just assumed, especially once Judge got hit in the hand, because that would just happen that Dak throws on an Aaron Judge jersey and Aaron Judge gets hit in the hand, and then people would naturally blame him. So that's kind of what I anticipated.
That makes quite a bit of sense. And now they said the X-rays are negative, but that makes a ton of sense. I mean, that is a meme. He puts that jersey on the next day. Judge gets hit in the hand.
Yeah, that's how people would react to it. So he was out there with George Kittle, Travis Kelce. Obviously, the Cowboys have two of their tight ends out there, Jake Ferguson and Luke Schoonmaker. But he's out there throwing to guys and interacting with a lot of different tight ends. And do you love or hate this quote from Dak Prescott yesterday talking to the guys, Chop? You guys are a quarterback's best friend.
The tight end?
Mm-hmm.
It depends on the tight end.
The one they have here.
That's fine. I have no problem with that. When you're Jason Witten at the end of his career, you know, when you're Jason Witten early in the career, that's great. At the end of his career, when he was a guy who was running down 5 yards, turning around, and being a safety net, I don't want that. In fact, I would eliminate the position. I don't want the quarterback to have that option. I want to force him to throw the ball downfield.
Yeah, and I think Ferguson's got downfield capability.
Yes, I like Ferg.
And I'm glad that Schoonmaker, who's been hurt the first couple of years that he's been here in Dallas at the start of the offseason programs, I'm glad that he's out there at least trying to get some sort of knowledge base from other guys in the league and take advantage of that. So that's a positive to me, and I think you can take that out of that. But it is, if you say that the tight end is the quarterback's best friend, I know that there's some people who probably say, oh, that's a check down mentality, if that's what you're saying. Now, you've said before, Chop, the tight end position can be the greatest mismatch on the football field if you have the right one.
Tight end and the third receiver, right?
The kind of quality that you can get there.
Yeah, if you get I just keep going back to Tampa Bay the year they won the Super Bowl. When you have Antonio Brown as your three, going up against the other team's three. The other team's third corner is generally not great. The Cowboys had a good one last year going into the season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've had that. But generally, you're not going to have a great third corner. So when you have a good third receiver, it's huge. And I think a tight end's the same way, because if you got a tight end that can stretch the field, they're too big for line, they're too big for safeties and too fast for linebackers.
Right.
Ideally. I mean, that's why Travis Kelce and George Kittle, and there's others.
Yeah. I mean, LaPorta last year was a big advantage for Detroit.
I love Njoku at Cleveland.
I love the potential.
Yeah, that's what it is. He's got so much potential. Those guys just great mismatches, I think.
Speaking of Cleveland and Dallas, for that matter, we now know that it is not money that's hanging up the Cleveland Browns and Amari Cooper, as Amari Cooper missed mandatory minicamp. It's a year's issue, Chop. They can't agree to how long they want this contract to be. Apparently, they're fine, comfortable paying him, giving him a pay raise and throwing him that money. But the issue is that Amari wants more than a year. And Cleveland's like, no. You can get a pay raise, but it's 1 year, dude. Which I can understand a little bit of reservation, given the fact that Amari has struggled to stay healthy at times throughout his career. But look, if that discontent gets going anymore, maybe you offer them a conditional fifth-round pick, Chop, as somebody did to you, and maybe you just say, hey, if you can't come to terms with Amari Cooper, maybe just send him right back here.
We don't have
mask mandates anymore. Send him back.
That's right. You know what a fifth-round pick is? That's apparently the penalty for tampering. So just go ahead and do it. It probably doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, exactly.
That's not a bad idea. If he's upset with his contract, but he doesn't love football, Bobby.
Nope.
He doesn't love football. Apparently, that's what I've been told. So, can't have him. All right, it is Sean and RJ here on 105.3 The Fan. A little Inside the Star. Thank you, Roberto. We will have a little bit of College Kegger coming up at 7 o'clock. Excited about that one. But how the Mavs can get back to the NBA Finals next year, that's next on The Fan.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
Good morning, DFW. Sean and RJ here on this Hump Day edition.
Hump Day.
105.3 The Fan. Sean's out, back tomorrow. Quick one day off. It is Juneteenth. Happy Juneteenth to everyone out there. If you are having the day off, you're going to work. Thanks for popping us on here on 105 through The Fan. Coming up at 6:40, a little scandal that is rocking a local community here in DFW.
Not a little one.
That's very big scandal. But let's do a little, how the Mavs can get back to the NBA Finals coming up again next year. I saw this. Three areas from USA Today that Luka can improve on or must improve on. Tell me what you think of these, Bobby. Now, first off, yesterday I did notice a lot of people in the national media trying to convince themselves that Jason Tatum is better than Luka overall because he plays defense.
Man, look, I've made my feelings on Jason Tatum known. And look, maybe 20% of it's a bit.
Yeah, I get it.
Like, I push it over the top how bad I think he is. But I think anyone who... I'll say this. Jason Tatum is closer to the 20th best player in the league than he is to Luka.
Ooh. So you have him outside the top 10 for sure?
No, not even that necessarily. Like, he could be... Even if he's 9th, I think there is a chasm when you're talking about when you get towards the top. If you're trying to tell me he's... on Luka's level, no. He's closer to player 20 than Luka.
Right, yeah, Luka's got a much better offensive game. Now, Tatum defensively is way better than Luka is. How much do you weigh defense? That's the problem.
Well, Luka, I understand. We saw what happened in the finals, and that's going to color a lot of our thinking when we talk about Luka, but Luka got better defensively this year. Like, the numbers show he was... solid defensively for a lot of the year, especially in the second half. And there are times that he showed during the playoff run that he can play quality defense. Now, I think a lot of it is engagement and want to, but I think that we're being prisoners of the moment a little bit with he's never been a top tier defender. He's never been all NBA defender, but it's not enough of a gap to cover over how much better Luka is on the offensive side of the ball.
I agree. So these are the three areas they talk about. One is defense. Sure. Now, the first line of this is, Doncic's defense was appalling during the first two games of the series. I've never heard somebody's defense be called appalling before.
First
I like
three
it.
Games, really.
Yeah. Consistently allowing his opponents to blow by him on drives. Doesn't sprint into closeouts or rotate over to provide help defense. He upped his effort as the series wore on. Still, they viewed him as the weak defensive link. And that's true. And I think that's the Mavs' biggest weakness moving forward is their perimeter defense with their two guys up top. Not even perimeter defense. Like, Kyrie and Luka, their two best players, are liabilities.
Yeah, look,
At times, Luka is. Luka can be better because he's got size. He can use his size. He needs to learn to do what Jason Kidd was able to do, which is use his size and strength.
Which he has done well at times. Like, that's typically how, when he's improved his defense and he played better defensively in the second half of this season, it's a lot of times due to the way that he uses his size and his strength. Because he is strong.
Yeah.
And guys will have trouble getting around him at times because of that. And so, I mean, look, his net rating. So when you take his offensive rating and his defensive rating, which basically what that is, that's the number of points a team produced per 100 possessions.
Yeah.
And on defensive side, it's the number of points they allowed per 100 possessions. So then whatever that discrepancy is between the offensive rating and the defensive rating is your net rating. Luka had the best net rating of his career this year. He was +9. And it's because he did play better defensively. And I mean, obviously he he played incredible on offense, and the Mavericks had really strong offensive, you know, connection there with him and Kyrie, and so that put the offensive rating up. But he played better defensively and was somebody who showed at times, like, when he's invested, he can be at times above average defensively just because of his physical makeup. And he does have a high basketball IQ.
Oh, yeah. Big time. Big time basketball IQ. He can do it. There's no doubt. Number two, conditioning. Now, y'all know me. I always kind of push back at this because we just don't know, like, how conditioned someone is by looking at them. Like, right. You can't look at the bodies. I don't think you can look at somebody's body and determine in shape they are.
Bartolo Colon played till he was 50.
Yeah. Shredded doesn't mean you're in shape. It just means you eat right.
Yeah.
Right? Or have a good fast metabolism. Doesn't mean how far you can run. But, I mean, it does look on the surface. It just looks like he does wear down in the fourth quarter.
Yeah. Now, we had talked about this. We talked about this yesterday a little bit. He played by far the most minutes that he'd ever played in his career.
Yeah.
So it was 21-22 was his previous high. He played 2,800 minutes then. He just finished this season playing 3,500 minutes.
It's a lot.
He played 700 more minutes than he's ever played in his career.
He's played more games. You know, the new rules, right, with the 65 games you got to play in order to qualify for any awards.
He's banged up. He played more minutes than he ever had. Now, look. The reality is, does he need to show up in better shape, and does he need to be in better shape throughout the season? Probably.
Yeah, probably does.
That's fair, but to me, I don't think we've seen that conditioning necessarily. Like you said, shape and conditioning are a little bit different things to me, and the conditioning, I don't think we've seen consistently that it's been as much of a problem for him on a game-to-game basis. It's more, I think, got down to the end of the year, was worn out and was hurt, and it all kind of took its toll. But ultimately, I think that this would be down my list in terms of, I'd much rather he work on not bitching to the refs over that.
I agree. I think I would much rather that one as well. And then the final one is playing off the ball. This one I love. They call him a heliocentric player. I hate that word. It's too big. They need to find a better one to use, which basically means the offense revolves around him. He's the sun. His teammates just orbit around him. And they talked about this. You shouldn't take breaks on defense. Take breaks on offense. Play off the ball. Let someone get the ball to you. That's what's the whole point of having another one who can create like Kyrie can. Is so you can play off.
It's so difficult, though, because of the way that he plays. Like, so much of it is his pacing and the way he can slow the tempo down and the way that he can, you know, kind of speed up and slow it down and change speed. And that sort of thing has been difficult for defenders. We've referenced it before. Kevin Durant talked about the thing that makes Luka most difficult to guard is the way that he can just speed things up and slow it down. And, like, he can just throttle the pace however he wants.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that makes it really difficult for guys to keep in front of him or to, you know, time his jump shot or any of the other things that he does well. And so, I don't know, like, that same sort of pacing, that sort of advantage he has, you don't get as much of that off the ball. And so, I think this team is at its best if Luka is controlling things.
Yeah.
And is orchestrating things the way that he wants. I don't know how much I want hit that taken out of his hands.
I'd like to see them try it. I'd like to see them try.
They did a little bit in, you know, game 4. Like, P.J. Washington brought the ball up a couple different times. We've seen Kyrie kind of work the offense at times.
Yeah, but I mean for, like, an extended period of time. Like, during the regular season. Like, use that, you know what I mean? Like, instead of just doing it, like, a couple times in a game. Like make that, not necessarily the focal point of the offense, but have, you know, kind of times in the game all year where that's going to be the way things are run.
Yeah, I mean, there was, I know we played the clip from Redick last week where J.J. Redick had said, I would like to see more of Kyrie and Luka both off of the ball. Like, find some sort of way to move them around just so it's not just ISO ball all the time. And I understand that, but also you got to remember, what are you working with? Who do you really trust to operate the offense if you're not going to have the ball in Kyrie and Luka's hands? Even if you want to say, hey, let's find some different ways to do this. And as the fan text had just pointed out, the 972, he's also not a great spot up shooter.
That's true. He's not. He's a guy who has to have the ball. He has to be ball dominant. Because part of what makes him great is his ability to pass. I get that, but I just don't know that you want to be a stop down, because he can be a stop down.
He can, but so much of this offense is so much of the issues that they had at times during the postseason with their offense would be fixed if you just, like we talk about, develop the Derek Lively three-pointer, or you get a more reliable shooter. Like, where is their Sam Hauser? Like, just get me that guy.
Well,
get me the reliable sharpshooter.
Interesting you bring him up, because there was an article on the salary cap spending for all 30 teams and where they are and who they might get. And in terms of the free agents who fit, Sam Hauser is one of the names listed under the Dallas Mavericks.
Cha-ching!
As players who fit. Now, they're $3 million above the tax. Wait, how stupid is the NBA salary cap? Above the tax, $3 million. Below the first apron, $3.5 million. Below the second apron, $14 million. They got a $4.5 million trade exception and a $4 million trade exception. Whatever. Why can't they just make it so the fans can actually see what the hell's... What, is the first apron good or bad? Is the second apron good or bad?
Like, there's a reason the ESPN trade machine has been so popular for so many years. Because people are like, I have no idea if this will work. I literally have to input the data into a machine to tell me if the salary cap will allow this to happen.
The maximum contract he can offer Derek Jones Jr. is $5.1 million. He started 76 games. He's their best on-ball defender. So they're probably going to lose him unless they can make some maneuvering to get money freed up. But they return everybody except him. He's a free agent. And
that's their biggest free agent by far.
And they might lose Markieff Morris. Okay. Whatever. Other guys that are free agents who might fit, like, they have names like Josh Richardson. He's been here, done that. Markelle Fultz.
Ooh.
Cam Reddish, Matt Ryan, good quarterback, Johnny Juzang, Reggie Jackson, Sam Hauser, Dennis Smith. I mean, they're done that. So
I just think
that's what, Malik Beasley. That's what you're looking at in this offseason.
I think one of the things that they can conceivably add, given the space that they have, is they can go find somebody to be that sniper three-point shooter, which they didn't have.
Yeah, they didn't have it. That's true. All right, Sean and RJ here on 105 through the Fan on this hump day
edition
of the program. Range let another one slip last night. They're going to continue to go the Creed well, that's for sure. That was awesome the other night they did that. But there was a local scandal we will get into coming up next that is traumatizing. That's next here on the Fan.
A one ball count. Yates about as deliberate as you're allowed to be with the pitch clock, and comes home. There's a swing and a hot shot over third. It's past the diving Duran and down into the left field corner. Nemo scores. J.D. Martinez will stop at third. It's a double for Alonso, and the Mets lead 7-6.
Eric Nadel with the call in a game you heard right here. It is Sean and RJ on 105 through the Fan in the Hump Day edition.
Hump Day.
Of the 6 a.m. Club. Rangers lose 7-6 to the red-hot New York Mets in a game they led 6-2 after 5. Terrible loss for the Rangers.
Got to close that one out. You have to close it out. Now, by the way, I just playing that cut there where he said Nadel was calling Duran not able to make the play. Do you remember Michael Young's nickname on Twitter at the end of his career here? It was Padmai.
Past
a diving Michael Young. It just reminded me because he said past a diving Ezekiel Duran, and it made me think of the old...
That's padded.
Yeah.
Now he's padded.
Yeah, he's padded. It made me think of the old Twitter nickname. Twitter can be brutal, man.
Twitter can be brutal. The goal in life is never to be the main character on Twitter.
Almost as brutal as the Rangers bullpen was last night.
That was not good. That was not a good bullpen effort last night. Leclerc, third of an inning, two hits, one run, one walk. Robertson, in and in a third, three hits, two runs, three strikeouts. Lats allowed a walk in a third of an inning. And Yates, an inning, one run not earned, a strikeout and a walk. So let's see, that's four runs total from the bullpen in three innings.
Yeah. They couldn't close it out. They weren't good enough. And, you know, his peripherals still look pretty good overall.
Who, talking about Robertson?
David Robertson, but he's started to have a little bit of that regression to the mean that you get.
I mean, he's old, man. He's like 50 years old.
Yeah, look, I mean, I still think that I trust him more than I would trust a lot of other guys in this bullpen right now. But, I mean, we're talking about...
Last week, his ERA is over 5 with a whip of 1.2. Whip is walks and hits. Walks plus hits to innings pitched.
Right. And, I mean, you look at... Gosh, how many is it? 7, 9, 11. 11 of the 13 earned runs that he's allowed this season have come in his last 10 appearances.
And that's with innings where he's striking out Betts, Freeman, and Ohtani on back-to-back-to-back.
Yeah, look, it's nitpicking overall. Most nights, David Robertson is not going to be your problem.
No.
It's just, again, you're seeing a little bit recently of some of the natural, you know, leveling off of things, whether it be with Kirby Yates or David Robertson. These sort of things are going to happen. It's just frustrating. It comes on a night when you actually had some offensive output with as much as they've struggled to get that.
And they have struggled. Now, they did not struggle last night. That took 6 off of Severino. But he had a cool glove, by the way. Did you notice that?
No.
It was like a kind of a, not teal, it was like a lighter teal. I thought it was a really sharp looking glove.
They've got the Bally replay up here on TV. I'm looking at it right now. That doesn't look teal. That looks just normal. Did he switch it?
He must have switched. Unless there was a different pitcher I was thinking of.
Foreign substance, probably.
Oh, hang on. It's a different game. Before the Ranger game started, I was watching, I was flipping back and forth between the Orioles game and the Reds and Pittsburgh. And one of those guys, I can't remember which one, had a teal glove. It was badass.
I do like the 817's argument here, that this is the G-bag curse again.
I can see it. I don't even know what you're talking about, but I agree with it.
They had David Robertson on their player show, and the G-bag curse has been a real thing. Now, they've tried to shift it around in recent years and try to say, well, now we're the G-bag, like you, we boost you. We're the slump busters now. Yeah. You need to come on the show. But, man, this is another turn against them.
So the Rangers lose 7-6 in Arlington to the Mets. And the Mets did. This was on Monday. The Rangers had a mariachi band out there. Mariachi.
Ah.
And the Mets broadcast, which I don't think, you know, they may not know much about the whole Creed thing. I'm sure they know whatever they knew from afar from the World Series last year. But the band was out there playing Creed, and the Mets broadcast did get a little bit of a snippet of it.
Let's make our escape. So let's go there.
Here we go, baby.
As can we stay?
I like it.
Yeah.
Is there... I'm curious. Is there an expiration date on the higher bit?
Oh, I mean, I thought it would have been, the expiration date would have been like, you know, you do it last year, you come back a little bit with it this year, it fades away, and then if you have a late playoff surge, you bring it back.
Then it can be your Sweet Caroline at that point.
Yeah, it could be your Sweet Caroline. The song's old enough to where you can make it into the Sweet Caroline kind of thing. I don't think it's as good of a song as Sweet Caroline.
I like the idea of just the mariachi band playing it during the seventh inning.
I think that's great. I think that's fantastic. So that was you know, fun little thing out of the ballpark in a series really void of fun things for the home team.
Not a lot of fun. Not a lot of fun, not just in this series, just not a lot of fun in the last 6 days or so.
No, really not. Rangers now 10 games back of Seattle in the AL West. It's Sean and RJ on 105 through the Fan. We got a giveaway coming up in the 7 o'clock hour, as well as we'll do a little college football kegger. We will chop it up, but... there's a traumatizing local story, Bobby.
There is, and specifically, you know, you always like to give these disclaimers or these heads up for anybody listening, whenever you're going to talk about this sort of thing, sensitive subject, about a local story here involving abuse of, you know, past abuse of a child. But Gateway Church in Southlake, Texas, which is the...
But depending, I drive by it every day.
Depending on how you gauge, like how... It's tough to get exact figures on weekly attendance.
I know you have to buy season tickets.
It's tough to get and pay your PSLs and everything. It's tough to get those firm figures of how many people attend, especially when you got multi-sites and stuff like that. But they claim as many as 100,000 people there weekly.
I'll tell you this, because I have to drive by it to get home every day. Mm-hmm. Years ago when, like, before 114, like, was completely finished, there were times I was like, all right, I'm not going that way around the church schedule.
Oh, yeah. No, they will, like, they have to have traffic cones out there, police on Sunday morning church. Yeah. Like, if you're driving to that area, they've got to have cop cars out there. Basically, it's like trying to leave a stadium.
I used to have to rush to get to South Lake Town Square if I knew it was a Sunday or Saturday night. And I knew church was about to get out.
You're trying to get over to Chewy's or something over there?
Not happening. Yeah. Not happening. It's tough.
They have the road flares. Yeah. They have cops out there kind of orchestrating traffic. It is a massive church. At the very least, they are, even without the firm figures of attendance, they're like one of the 10 most attended churches in the United States. So they're a big deal. And their pastor there, Robert Morris, former pastor now, a story had come out late last week on a blog called The Wartburg Watch, and it had interviewed a woman. They had interviewed a woman who had said that Robert Morris, the pastor at Gateway Church, had sexually assaulted her over the course of 5 years from the age of 12 to 17. And Robert Morris went up there on Sunday at his church and had discussed the story after it became a controversy and said essentially this was a moral failing. The term he had used, he said it was inappropriate sexual behavior with a young lady. And a lot of news outlets picked up that quote and used it to describe the story, and they got crushed.
They used that quote to describe the story.
Of basically talking about the assault of a 12-year-old using the description inappropriate sexual behavior with a young lady. So ever since Monday, after he went up there and made his statement, and Gateway Church initially had put out a statement saying, hey, we were fully aware of this. He's been vetted and cleared, and this is in the past, and he's all good, people. They got pressed hard after Sunday by a lot of people in just, like, you know, there's a lot of public pressure on Gateway to do something about it. So yesterday, Robert Morris, one of the most powerful evangelical individuals in the country, resigned from Gateway Church. And the statement given to the Dallas Morning News from Gateway Church said, the elder's prior understanding was that Morris's extramarital relationship, which he had discussed many times throughout his ministry, was with, quote, a young lady and not abuse of a 12-year-old child. So they said that this was new information for them.
They had no idea.
They knew of the incident. They had no idea of the age is what they're saying.
Okay.
It's tough because this woman says she's tried to be heard a lot. She's in her 50s now, lives in Oklahoma, but she said she's tried to be heard a lot over the years, just trying to inform people over there. And they have kind of turned their head a little bit until the story went viral on Friday. But this is...
And how long has he been there?
26 years since they opened. And this happened 35 years ago when he was in his 20s. And he was a traveling evangelist, so he would go to, like, different cities and do things. But this is, I mean, when you talk about, yeah, it's a church, but I mean, that is a big business as well there in Southlake.
Yeah.
I mean, it is a massive, they do a lot of things over there that this is a big, and look, he's got a lot of political connections. This is a very powerful, prominent individual with a lot of money that is tied into that building over there. And this is a massive controversy. And what part of the story became was like what we just talked about, the way it was reported and the way it was talked about, where they were allowed to frame it almost the way they wanted. And then news stories just picked it up and aggregated it based on how did the church talk about it And so there were a lot of different news outlets that got pushed back on. You're allowing them to dictate the terms of what it should have been called, which was abuse. It was abuse. It's, I mean, the term for it, like, it's sexual assault. It's child molestation.
Yes.
That's the term. It's not inappropriate relationship with a young lady. It's child molestation.
Just the way it's framed where the elders, they call them the elders. It just sounds
972 waited 35 years. What a joke. Nope. Did not wait 35 years. 972 had tried to be heard for 35 years and it was not addressed until recently when a blog post went viral. So there's a lot of documentation over it being
where there was a separate
church that had apparently vetted and overseen his redemption from it 35 years ago. So this is something that has been out there and just
it had never
kind of reached the circulation of the masses. They kind of effectively kept it quiet. So good news. Should resign. Shouldn't have been in position to lead that church anymore.
That is an awful, awful story out in Southlake. All right, Sean and RJ here on 105.3 The Fan. They got the commercial free expressway coming up at 7:20. It is the 7 o'clock hour. We have lost another legend in sports. The great Willie Mays has passed away. We'll give our thoughts on that coming up next to The Fan, along with a college football kegger.
A one ball count. Yates about as deliberate as you're allowed to be with the pitch clock. And comes home. There's a swing and a hot shot over third. It's past the diving Duran and down into the left field corner. Nimmo scores. J.D. Martinez will stop at third. It's a double for Alonso, and the Mets lead 7-6.
Eric Nadel with the call in a game you heard right here. It is Sean and RJ on 105 through The Fan in the Hump Day edition.
Hump Day
of the 6 a.m. Club. Rangers lose 7-6 to the red-hot New York Mets in a game they led 6-2 after 5. Terrible loss for the Rangers.
Got to close that one out. You have to close it out. Now, by the way, I just planned that cut there where he said Nadel was calling Duran not able to make the play. Do you remember Michael Young's nickname on Twitter at the end of his career here? It was Padmai.
Past
a diving Michael Young. It just reminded me because he said past a diving Ezekiel Duran, and it made me think of the old... So
that's padded.
Yeah.
He's now padded.
Yeah, he's padded. It made me think of the old Twitter nickname. Twitter can be brutal, man.
Twitter can be brutal. The goal in life is never to be the main character on Twitter.
Almost as brutal as the Rangers bullpen was last night.
That was not good. That was not a good bullpen effort last night. Leclerc, third of an inning, two hits, one run, one walk. Robertson, in and in a third, three hits, two runs, three strikeouts. Lats allowed a walk in a third of an inning. And Yates, an inning, one run not earned, a strikeout and a walk. So let's see, that's four runs total from the bullpen in three innings.
Yeah, they couldn't close it out. They weren't good enough. And, you know, his peripherals still look pretty good overall.
Who, talking about Robertson?
David Robertson, but he's started to have a little bit of that regression to the mean that you get.
I mean, he's old, man. He's like 50 years old.
Yeah, look, I mean, I still think that I trust him more than I would trust a lot of other guys in this bullpen right now. But, I mean, we're talking about...
Last week, his ERA is over 5 with a whip of 1.2. Whip is walks and hits. Walks plus hits to innings pitched.
Right. And, I mean, you look at, gosh, how many is it? 7, 9, 11. 11 of the 13 earned runs that he's allowed this season have come in his last 10 appearances.
And that's with innings where he's striking out Betts, Freeman, and Ohtani on back-to-back-to-back.
Yeah, look, it's nitpicking overall. Most nights, David Robertson is not going to be your problem.
No.
It's just, again, you're seeing a little bit recently of some of the natural, you know, leveling off of things, whether it be with Kirby Yates or David Robertson. These sort of things are going to happen. It's just frustrating. It comes on a night when you actually had some offensive output with as much as they've struggled to get that.
And they have struggled. Now, they did not struggle last night. That took 6 off of Severino. But he had a cool glove, by the way. Did you notice that?
No.
It was like a... kind of a, not teal, it was like a lighter teal. I thought it was a really sharp looking glove.
They've got the Bally replay up here on TV. I'm looking at it right now. That doesn't look teal. That looks just normal. Did he switch it?
He must have switched. Unless there was a different picture I was thinking of.
Foreign substance, probably.
Oh, hang on. It's a different game. Before the Ranger game started, I was watching, I was flipping back and forth between the Orioles game and the Reds and Pittsburgh. And one of those guys, I can't remember which one, had a teal glove. It was badass.
I do like the 817's argument here, that this is the G-bag curse again.
I can see it. I don't even know what you're talking about, but I agree with it.
They had David Robertson on their player show, and the G-bag curse has been a real thing. Now, they've tried to shift it around in recent years and try to say, well, now we're the G-bag, like you, we boost you. You need to, we're the slump busters now. Yeah. You need to come on the show. But, man, this is another turn against them.
The Rangers lose 7-6 in Arlington to the Mets. And the Mets did, this was on Monday. The Rangers had a mariachi band out there, mariachi.
Ah.
And the Mets broadcast, which I don't think, you know, they may not know much about the whole Creed thing. I'm sure they know whatever they knew from afar from the World Series last year. But the band was out there playing Creed, and the Mets broadcast did get a little bit of a snippet of it.
Let's make our escape. So let's go.
Curious, is there an expiration date on the hire bit?
Oh, I mean, I thought it would have been, the expiration date would have been like, you know, you do it last year, you come back a little bit with it this year, it fades away, and then if you have a late playoff surge, you bring it back.
Then it can be your Sweet Caroline at that point.
Yeah, it could be your Sweet Caroline. The song's old enough to where you can make it into the Sweet Caroline kind of thing. I don't think it's as good of a song as Sweet Caroline.
I like the idea of just the mariachi band playing it during the seventh inning.
I think that's great. I think that's fantastic. So that was a fun little thing out of the ballpark in a series really void of fun things for the home team.
Not a lot of fun. Not a lot of fun, not just in this series, man. Just not a lot of fun in the last 6 days or so.
No, really not. Rangers now 10 games back. Of Seattle in the AL West. It's Sean and RJ on 105 through the Fan. We got a giveaway coming up in the 7 o'clock hour, as well as we'll do a little college football kegger. We will chop it up. But there's a traumatizing local story, Bobby.
There is, and specifically, you know, you always like to give these disclaimers or these heads up for anybody listening whenever you're going to talk about this sort of thing. Sensitive subject about a local story here involving abuse of, you know, past abuse of a child. But Gateway Church in Southlake, Texas, which is the...
But depending I drive on, by it every day.
Depending on how you gauge, like how... It's tough to get exact figures on weekly attendance.
I know you have to buy season tickets.
It's tough to get and pay your PSLs and everything. It's tough to get those firm figures of how many people attend, especially when you got multi-sites and stuff like that. But they claim as many as 100,000 people there weekly.
I'll tell you this, because I have to drive by it to get home every day.
Mm-hmm.
Years ago when, like, before 114, like, was completely finished, there were times I was like, all right, I'm not going that way around the church schedule.
Oh, yeah. No, they will, like, they have to have traffic cones out there, police on Sunday morning church. Yeah. Like, if you're driving in that area, they've got to have cop cars out there. Basically, it's like trying to leave a stadium.
I used to have to rush to get to South Lake Town Square if I knew it was a Sunday or Saturday night, and I knew church was about to get out.
You're trying to get over to Chewy's or something over there?
Not happening. Yeah. Not happening. It's tough.
They have the road flares. Yeah. They have cops out there kind of orchestrating traffic. It is a massive church. At the very least, they are... Even without the firm figures of attendance, they're like one of the 10 most attended churches in the United States. So they're a big deal. And their pastor there, Robert Morris, former pastor now, a story had come out late last week on a blog called the Wartburg Watch, and it had interviewed a woman. They had interviewed a woman who had said that Robert Morris, the pastor at Gateway Church, had sexually assaulted her over the course of 5 years from the age of 12 to 17. And Robert Morris went up there on Sunday at his church and had discussed the story after it became a controversy and said essentially this was a moral failing. The term he had used, he said, it was inappropriate sexual behavior with a young lady. And a lot of news outlets picked up that quote and used it to describe the story, and they got crushed.
They used that quote to describe the story.
Of basically talking about the assault of a 12-year-old using the description inappropriate sexual behavior with a young lady. So ever since Monday, after he went up there and made his statement, and Gateway Church initially had had put out a statement saying, hey, we were fully aware of this. He's been vetted and cleared, and this is in the past, and he's all good, people. They got pressed hard after Sunday by a lot of people in just, like, you know, there's a lot of public pressure on Gateway to do something about it. So yesterday, Robert Morris, one of the most powerful evangelical individuals in the country, resigned from Gateway Church, and the statement given to the Dallas Morning News from Gateway Church said, the elder's prior understanding was that Morris's extramarital relationship, which he had discussed many times throughout his ministry, was with, quote, a young lady and not abuse of a 12-year-old child. So they said that this was new information for them.
They had no idea.
They had no, well, they knew they of the incident. They had, they had no idea of the age is what they're saying.
Okay.
It's tough because this woman says she's tried to be heard a lot. She's in her 50s now, lives in Oklahoma, but she said she's tried to be heard a lot over the years, just trying to inform people over there, and they have kind of turned their head a little bit until the story went viral on Friday. But this is...
And how long has he been there?
26 years since they opened. And this happened 35 years ago when he was in his 20s, and he was a traveling evangelist, so he would go to like different cities and do things. But this is, I mean, when you talk about, yeah, it's a church, but I mean, that's, that is a big business as well there in Southlake.
Yeah.
I mean, it is a massive, they do a lot of things over there that this is a big, and look, he's got a lot of political connections. This is a very powerful, prominent individual with a lot of money that is tied into that building over there. And this is a massive controversy. And what part of the story became was like what we just talked about, the way it was reported and the way it was talked about, where they were allowed to frame it almost the way they wanted. And then news stories just picked it up and aggregated it based on how did the church talk about it. And so there were a lot of different news outlets that got pushed back on, you're allowing them to dictate the terms of what it should have been called, which was abuse. It was abuse. It's, I mean, the term for it, like, it's sexual assault. It's child molestation.
Yes.
That's the term. It's not inappropriate relationship with a young lady. It's child molestation.
It's, and then, like, the way it's framed where the elders, they call them the elders. It just sounds.
972, waited 35 years. What a joke. Nope, did not wait 35 years. 972 had tried to be heard for 35 years, and it was not addressed until recently when a blog post went viral. So there's a lot of documentation over it being
where she tried to out.
Where, yeah, there's, I mean, it, there was silence, a, there was a separate church that had apparently vetted and overseen his redemption from it 35 years ago. So this is something that has been out there and just,
wow,
it had never kind of reached the circulation of the masses. They kind of effectively kept it quiet. So good news, should resign. Shouldn't have been in position to lead that church anymore.
That is a that is an awful, awful story out in Southlake. All right, Sean and RJ here on 105.3 The Fan. They got the commercial-free expressway coming up at 7:20. It is the 7 o'clock hour. We have lost another legend in sports. The great Willie Mays has passed away. We'll give our thoughts on that coming up next to The Fan, along with a college football kegger.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.